At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
I was going through some old episodes for some project that I was working on, and I came across this one that I'm doing today that I remember writing it. I cannot remember ever publishing it. So I went back to look at all my old episodes, including on the exclusive feed. I could not find that I had ever recorded this. I can't find my audio recording of it. So I don't think I actually did this one, and I wrote it back about a year ago. I think the original writing was from June of 2023. So I don't know. There was an update that I was able to find that just happened recently, so maybe I was waiting for the outcome of an appeal. I don't know. But if I have covered this story before, you'll have to let me know when I did it, and I guess I owe you another episode, but I don't think I've covered this one yet, but I wrote it a while ago. So we're going to do this one today. And this is one that I actually stumbled across. I was looking for medicine hat cases because I had a listener named Shauna who was sending me some medicine hat ones. And this is one that she didn't suggest to me, but I mean, it's a really strange case. So, she probably just kind of forgot about it. So this one's actually for Shauna. This is the murder of James Satir. On the morning of October 10th, 2017, a man who cannot be identified because of a publication ban, so we're going to call him Frank, he got an interesting letter on his desk when he came into work that morning. His receptionist had actually arrived first thing that morning and he found this envelope. It was marked personal and confidential, and it was taped to the office's front door. She removed it. She didn't really look at it. She placed it on her boss's desk. Now, this was the Tuesday after Canadian Thanksgiving, which, based on a lot of other cases that I've done, I don't know, Canadian Thanksgiving, it just tends to involve a lot of murders around here. I'm not sure why. It just seems that I'm always talking about Canadian Thanksgiving around here. Bad things seem to follow being grateful, I guess, which is kind of weird. Like, maybe it's the turkey and the mashed potatoes. But anyways, when Frank arrived for work and opened the letter, he was a bit surprised, to say the least. Now, I don't actually have a copy of this letter. I couldn't find it in any of the court transcripts, but I know what parts of it said. Quote, "We've been watching you and your wife and everyone else close to you for weeks. We are ready to kill any one of them. So my advice to you is to do as you are told, or my guys will go in for the kill. And that is one thing they love to do. Here is the game, and if you play without cheating, then you will win because you will have saved a lot of lives. On the other hand, cheat, and we promise you that your wife and a lot of other innocent people close to you, or perhaps you don't even know them, will die. Perhaps you would like an example of what we are capable of doing should you even be thinking of choosing the wrong option. On day two, we will show you exactly what we can do. We could leave a small body part like a finger or an ear or a tongue, but we do not want to freak out your assistants. So just hearing that an individual was brutally murdered on the radio should be enough. That kill will be free and will not put your name on that body. Better get at it, for we have no communication for any excuse you may have." Now, the writer of the letter demanded $1 million or someone was going to die, basically. He was also instructed to put a red piece of paper on the door of his office and leave it up all day. It was kind of like proof that he had gotten the letter. So Frank did that, actually, but he also put up a security camera that was pointed at the door and then took the letter to the police, fearing that his former business associate that he had was kind of out to get him, or at least scare the bejesus out of him. Frank and a couple of colleagues had grown concerned over some personal and financial issues that he was having with this former business partner, to the point that there were concerns that he could be violent and might come like and shoot up the place or something. So Frank and his former associate were currently embroiled in some kind of legal battles, that his former partner actually owed Frank a few hundred dollars. There was a writ of enforcement that had been ordered after a court ordered arbitration. So this night capture that or night camera that he had put up captures a man. He's wearing a hood. And he put a second letter up on the door. Now, so first thing the next morning, Frank went back to the police station with this letter, and they told him, you should probably leave town with your family. Like, there were a few letters that were actually written and delivered to him, which the police picked up then over the next 3 weeks. Like, so he did leave town, and then over the next 3 weeks, they were picking up these letters, all demanding the same thing and all giving, like, sort of pieces of a puzzle and leaving this trail of what Frank was supposed to do and when and where he was supposed to leave the money. It was actually a little bit of a treasure hunt, leading investigators on this sort of hunt around the city for these envelopes left at a number of different locations, and ultimately led to a place where he wanted a bag of cash to be left. So on that same morning of the second letter, which was the October 11th, it was around 7 a.m., Adam Hunter, who's a resident of Mill Street, he was a tow truck driver. He noticed one of his neighbors, Joseph Dolan, head out for his usual morning walk with his dog. Now, Mill Street's one of those streets where everybody knows everyone else by name. So Adam was very familiar with Joseph, who had been blind since the year 2000. So he lived in darkness, but Adam had actually seen Joseph crossing Alliance Avenue at rush hour on several occasions, while on his cell phone without any assistance, like and even jaywalking sometimes. So not a lot actually got by Joseph, despite his lack of eyesight. So he confidently headed out that morning to walk his dog. Now, Dolan's a little bit of a character, but this story isn't really about him. It's actually about what he discovered on his way home from this walk, or what his dog discovered, if you believe that he's in fact blind. Now, apparently the dog alerted him to something on the ground. It was outside of his neighbor's house. And the story gets a little bit muddy here, but the dog alerted him to something on the ground. And when Dolan got close enough, he could tell that it was a body, like a dead body, and called 911. Now, the call came in at 7:33. He told the dispatcher that his neighbor was dead and that there was a lot of blood. But he got a bit chewed up on his cross-examination later in trial because, of course, when this case went to court, he also said that the man's eyes were half closed, the lights were on in his house. He was able to tell the police about some of the vehicles that he'd seen in the area. So maybe he wasn't so blind after all, but it didn't really matter too much because his neighbor had seen him leave for his walk and was pretty sure that he had not been the one that had killed the man. And officers, including Sergeant Darlene Garich, had arrived on the scene only minutes after it happened at 7:39 and concurred what Dolan had in fact found. The man was definitely dead. He was found outside what was confirmed to be his own house. He was laying on his stomach with a pool of blood sort of drying beneath him. And Sergeant Garich could tell that the man was dead because he was already cold and he was starting to become stiff. There was also a large gaping hole in his abdomen. And the man was dressed in a jean jacket, jeans, and beige work gloves. So he was either just sort of coming out of his house to go to work or was outside maybe doing some yard work at the time that he was attacked. There were fresh tire tracks near his body, and Sergeant Garich went inside the house to secure the scene and make sure that no one was actually injured in the house still or hiding inside the house. The place was clean. There was no signs of any struggle had occurred in there. And on the kitchen table, his cell phone was there. He had some cash there. There was also a large number of marijuana plants around the house, so it wasn't theft. The man was identified as 63-year-old James Dale Satir, a man that was described by his friends and his family as like a gentle soul. He had a strong affinity for nature. He loved to travel, be outdoors with his family, camping, gardening, taking photographs. He was a Red Seal chef. He worked as a painter. Like a Red Seal in cooking is like a certification that's recognized nationally. He was considered an ideal neighbor, and people really enjoyed being around him and sharing space with him. And when Sergeant Garish informed his sister that he was dead, like she was beyond shocked, and as many people do, she said, like, I just saw him yesterday. He came over to return my ladder. Investigators were pretty quickly able to figure out that this James Satir's murder was actually collateral damage from these extortion letters that Frank had been receiving, because a final letter had been sent to the local newspaper and the writer claimed responsibility for James's murder and blamed Frank for it. For the police for not following his orders. So he was pretty specific about the cash too, that he wanted $400,000 in $100 bills, $300,000 in 50s, and then $300,000 in 20s. And the money was to be left at a coulee or like a drain in a ravine that he had picked out. And the police actually kind of followed his orders, like kind of. On October 16th, as they had been instructed to do, they did pack a duffel bag with $1 million in fake money. And they stuffed the rest of it to look like it was full with like cut up pieces of paper. And they also might have slipped a GPS tracker inside of it and some other high-tech CIA stuff. So an undercover officer left the bag in this coulee and they just walked away. And then 2 days later, there was a sensor in the bag that was tripped, and the GPS tracker started tracking it. And there was also a camera in there, like a hidden little camera inside the backpack that started snapping some photos. And the bag moved only about 30 meters, and then it was put down again in a different section of this same coulee. So Sergeant Jeffrey Click, he ran out to the spot where the bag had moved, but all he sees is this old guy with a cane who said, like, I don't know, I poked at it. And that matched to being the image that was on these photos. So they were a little bit disappointed. So they went back to Frank's former business partner as this best possible suspect. And then on November 7th, when that final letter was sent, the officers examined the scene where that note had been left. And they saw that there was footprints that had been left behind in the snow. And one of the officers sort of turned his head, saw a man was kind of watching them work and recognized him as this old guy with the cane from the photo that was taken when that bag moved. And the man was 59-year-old Robert Hoffman, who lived very close to Frank's business with his wife. They got a search warrant and found, seized a laptop from him. There was some USB sticks and a paper shredder. And on that laptop was copies of the letters that he had saved that looked a lot like the ones that had been sent to Frank and to the media. So it seems that after leaving the bag behind and giving Sergeant Click the story that he had just come across the bag and poked it with his cane, he continued walking along the coulee until he encountered James Satir doing some of this yard work that he was doing, and he stabbed him, ran off, went home, wrote another letter asking for a second drop off of the money to be attempted. So let's see what this Robert Hoffman's malfunction is and why he would like kill a complete stranger just to prove how serious he was about blackmailing Frank. Okay, so to be honest, I don't actually know a lot about Mr. Hoffman. I know his wife's name is Kelly. She stood by him during his trial, and I know that his middle name is Siesta, which is Spanish for nap. He was working in construction as a superintendent in 2015, but then he went on medical leave. He was citing at that time extreme and unusual mental abuse, which was causing him to suffer from a lot of anxiety. But his company said that they had no knowledge of his mental health issues when his position was actually eliminated in 2016, which was just a result of large-scale downsizing. And they also said that he didn't communicate to them at all while on medical leave, so they just assumed that he wasn't going to be returning to work with them anyways. And then in 2016, he went to the Workers' Compensation Board to complain that his job had left him crippled with anxiety, panic, and social anxiety. And then in 2017, he filed a complaint with the Alberta Human Rights Commission about a month before this whole extortion plan was hatched. And he claims that it was discrimination for his mental health issues that led to him losing his job. And he asked that his wife, Kelly, be able to act as his litigation representative, even though she was going to be one of the people testifying on the whole matter. So he filed his complaint on September 13th. So that was 4 weeks before the first letter arrived at Frank's business and before he murdered James Satir.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Robert was arrested on November 8th, 2017, and the police were able to gather quite a bit of evidence against Robert, making their case against him pretty tight. They weren't, however, able to find like a connection between him and Frank, like Frank, his business partner. But they did find that Robert had been dumb enough to leave his glasses with his DNA on them at the murder scene, particularly right underneath James's body where he had fallen on them. There was also his DNA on two of the envelopes that his letters were in. His shoe prints matched the footprints in the snow by the letter drop-off spot. And then, of course, the copies of the letters really provided the proverbial smoking gun here. And Robert's trial for first-degree murder actually got underway at the same time that Dustin Duthie was going on. That was in March of 2021, which is probably why I didn't hear anything going on about that case or about this case. A 14-person jury got to hear submissions for 7 weeks from Crown Prosecutor Ramona Robbins and then Robert's defense lawyer, Heather Ferg. And this was all presided over by Justice Dallas Miller. So Ramona told the jury, "There are just too many coincidences and puzzle pieces that cannot be explained away by Mr. Hoffman. These aren't random pieces. They do all fit together. You can reach only one conclusion based on all of the evidence that Robert Hoffman is guilty of first-degree murder and extortion." And then they went on to call about 100 witnesses, give or take. Heather, well, she didn't actually call any witnesses. She didn't present any evidence, which you don't have to do. It's on the prosecution to prove their case. But instead, she gave the jury some questions to try to answer, like, could there be other people involved? You know, Robin's asking you to brand this man a murderer. She's asking you to do that based on the Crown's evidence. When you really look at this evidence, there's no way you can do that. What about Frank's ex-business partner? What about Joseph Dolan and his fake blindness? What about Robert's wife, Kelly? And does Robert even have the ability to murder someone and write these extortion letters? I mean, with his mental health and his anxiety issues and all that. And could the police have cross-contaminated the DNA evidence? It's on the basis of all the questions that I have posed to you that the Crown has failed to answer key questions, and I'm asking you to acquit Bob Hoffman of both counts. I like how she calls him Bob. Makes him more relatable. But after about 7 hours of deliberation, the jury answered all of those questions with a resounding no and convicted Robert Hoffman of first-degree murder. And at the sentencing hearing on March 21st, 2021, there were victim impact statements that were read from James's family and friends. Now, one of his friends who didn't want to be named, she had her statement read by Ramona. It said in part, "To Mr. Hoffman, you have not ruined me so much as you have ruined yourself and those that love you," end quote. And then James's sister, Marie, told the court that James had been her brother, but also her best friend, and that, "I used to enjoy life, but now it's existing day to day." And now for this next part, you really need to close your eyes, unless you're driving, and just sort of picture this. So this is during COVID, so there's not a lot of spectators in the courtroom, but the public can Zoom, like they can link in by Zoom. So Justice Miller says, the sentence the court imposes for the planned and deliberate murder of James Satir is life imprisonment with no eligibility for parole for 25 years, which is standard. And at that moment, Robert dramatically keels over, and the sheriff rushes to him, but not in time to catch him. So he actually falls on the floor of this courtroom, and he knocks over this chair that's behind him. And it's like the chair goes clunking against the spectator pews that they have. And so Kelly, his wife, yells from the courtroom gallery, Bob, I'm here. Just deep breaths, deep breaths. And then one of Robert's sons yells to the sheriff that's rushing to his aid, fucking bullshit, that was fucking late. And then all of a sudden the Zoom camera just shuts off. And then just all those people that are watching at home are just like sort of blinking around in disbelief. Like, I cannot believe that I have this day job, so I cannot attend these trials in person, because that would have been just amazing to witness. Anyways, a month after this conviction, he fired all his lawyers, decided to start representing himself, which is always a great idea, and requested the Alberta Court of Appeal hear him out. Now, he wants this new trial because the verdict was completely unreasonable, in his opinion, because the police violated his rights. Now, originally at the first tribunal that they had in August of 2021, which he did over the phone because of COVID, he got himself so agitated that they actually had to just shut the whole meeting down. Now, meanwhile, while he was waiting to be heard on that matter, in December of 2022, he files a lawsuit against the Calgary Remand Center, which is like the jail, the holding jail, asking for $1.25 million, claiming that he was beaten by the guards on April 3rd, 2021. Quote, I was physically assaulted by CRC guards, all while I was having a panic anxiety attack. The worst was when I was choked out like George Forbes. I felt like I was a millisecond away from dying and never seeing my family again. That is the worst feeling in the world. I was able to say, I can't breathe, several times. And one of the guards from the hallway stated, it's a little late in saying that, when the guard finally got off me. This all happened while I was already having trouble breathing from my panic anxiety attack, and it just added so much more to it, end quote. Now, I'm pretty sure he was referring to George Floyd, not George Forbes, in that reference. The man that was murdered basically by a police officer, Derek Chauvin, in Minnesota, which of course sparked the revival of the Black Lives Matter movement. I wasn't actually able to find any photos of Robert, but his last name means farm in German, so I'm pretty sure that he's white. Anyways, he says he's been having nightmares and trust issues basically with the guards ever since that incident. Quote, I am scared what will happen on my next panic anxiety attack. Maybe next time I won't survive. For all the trauma and physical as well as mental abuse, the injuries sustained from this, even that will haunt me for many years to come. I cannot settle for anything short of $1.25 million. And then on January 13th, 2023, he had an appeal that was finally heard, and yes, he represented himself at the hearing and referred to himself in the third person. Quote, the charges that have been put on Mr. Hoffman were of the utmost serious charges. They have impacted his family's life as well as his own. Now he said about himself, you should not be allowed to lock up a person for the rest of his life based on nothing but false statements, fictitious photos, speculation, and not following police protocol. And then when they showed him a photo of this bag with the fake money, he said, the picture of a man with a walking stick just shows a man enjoying the outdoors, listening to the water running and the wildlife. That is not a crime. So Sarah Clive, she was for the Crown, she said in response, What we do have is uncontroverted evidence from the officers that the tracking device went off and simultaneously photographs were taken. Those photographs were of Mr. Hoffman. It was simply the starting point for the investigation. It was the catalyst that allowed the police to identify Mr. Hoffman. They did what they were supposed to do, which is follow the evidence. And that evidence was, again, Robert's DNA on the letters and his own glasses found under James' dead body. And then on July 5th, 2023, that appeal was denied. The panel said, in our opinion, the appellate is unable to show any basis upon which we should consider new issues or establish that the rights were violated, and that there was overwhelming evidence to point to his guilt. So that was the crazy murder of James Satir, which I'm pretty sure I have not told you before. And again, if I did, like, please let me know what date I did. And then I owe you another episode then if that's the case. And in the meantime, before next week, when I come up with another episode, I hope that you will do your thing with the rates, reviews, subscribe, follow the show, and then sign up for the exclusive and ad-free episodes. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And Future Stronger You can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.